You know, for a short time in my 20s, I seriously considered becoming a watchmaker. There was a program to train watchmakers. It was an academy. It was a multi-year program. And here was something interesting. It was completely free. You would get a full scholarship if you got all the way through it. What would happen is that for the first few months, it was incredibly intense, enough that a majority, a true majority of students would drop out. Just too much for the average person. But then whoever stayed, well, they'd be molded, trained, taught, and they would become, at the end, trained watchmakers who would then move on to all of the major firms out there who were desperate, starving for the kind of person who could work with a luxury watch, enough that they were paying the full freight of training students. Ultimately, I did not become a watchmaker. But what fascinated me about it, and the fact that I researched it down to the point of then making a decision not to do it, puts me squarely in line with my pal, Chris Orcutt, who I've had a number of conversations with over the years, and there's a flavor to them that I am really proud to share. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. I did an entire episode on my friend Chris Orcutt and my life with him over the last 40 years, but I did want to talk about this one interesting aspect of our friendship. We have marathon phone calls. It starts with something simple. Chris wants some technical advice, or I just saw something neat and wanted to tell him, or we both learned about something and maybe even haven't talked for a while. We just want to, you know, talk like friends do. And one of us calls the other, and hours go by. So many hours go by that we are doing multiple activities while still talking. I'm going for walks. He's working through things himself. We each take lyrical journeys through thought, opinion, energy, emotion. I don't talk like that to many people at all. We've done it for decades now. Ever since we've been separated, either by moving or going to different jobs or one of us having a lifestyle that isn't compatible with visits, we always find a time to connect. And days, months, years could have gone by, and it's like no time has passed at all. It's beautiful, really, and I was reminded of it again because we'd been talking recently about podcasts. Chris has finally started listening to episodes of this podcast, and not to get too meta, for my friends who know me personally, the podcast Jason is a weird remixed version of the Jason they know personally and over time. I'm much more thoughtful, introspective. I go from one part of the narrative to another relatively smoothly. That's a privilege not extended to folks who talk to me on the phone or in real time. I jump over hurdles and draw connections that destroy the prepositions I've been using. I could at one point be talking about something that's happening now, switch over to something that happened 50 years ago, and draw it all into one big bow, talking about a conclusion of which I've not blessed anybody with the points in between. My friends have learned how to deal with this. Chris has certainly learned how to deal with this. He is not afraid to stand up and say, wait a minute, who is who? Who's this person? Where's this place? Where are we, buddy? Take me back. Give me a ride back to where we were before. Give me a ride back to the main topic sentence. Chris started out loving writing. He would write stories in college and he would show them to me. Some of them were simple. Some of them were very emotional. And throughout his life, he's discovered that's where his love lies, where his purpose lives. He's actually transferred over from merely writing stories and writing to earn a living, which he has done, to writing things that will have meaning and weight out of time. He's working on a number of novels at any given time, has them in a vault when he's not editing them, gives himself months to get distance from the work so he can edit it objectively. I really have learned a lot from him, because there's many times I've gone back to writing I did even 6 months or a year before, and I'm like, who, what, why, take me back. Bring me to the main topic, buddy, because I don't even recognize where I was going. He's got a lot of thoughts about the human condition, and he's put them into his novels. Many of them are fiction. Mysteries, noir, autobiography with a dash of fantasy, all brought down to earth by his wide-eyed, open viewing of what the world really is. Chris's fascination with podcasts is therefore built from the fact that I am winding together stories and taking pieces of my life and putting them together. That is a whole discipline, and he's been living in it, and he wants to know where it comes from. The way that I work is I speak extemporaneously. I put things together on the fly and then go through editing and polish it as I can. Sometimes I knock out entire paragraphs or parts of the podcast if I think that it's gone too far afield. In other words, I am so much more focused than my real conversations tend to be. A typical podcast may be 20, 30, 40 minutes, with the final being less than half that. That's a lot to throw by the side. But it's worked out really nicely. I love editing. I love taking pieces. I love taking things that are lying distantly apart and bringing them together into a structure that just glides you through, gives you some insight, and then drops you off. It doesn't stick around too long and linger. It's not filled with uncertainty and doubt and considerations about what other people are thinking. I make my statements. I move on. That's the key to me to making a podcast, or frankly any work, compelling to an audience. In our winding conversations, Chris and I touch everywhere. Politics, life, opinion, history, trivia, thoughts about others, people we've both known, people that only one of us knows about, and we explain to the other what makes them special or offensive or fascinating. And then we drag it to another direction. We turn our focus to topic after topic after topic. Like me, Chris took an interest in going to a rather interesting discipline in his 20s, while I was fascinated at the idea of becoming a watchmaker, the idea of learning a discipline so well that you can do something that very few people on Earth could possibly do, and understand all of the underpinning science and metallurgy and craft. Chris also took an interest in crime fighting. For a while, he was planning to do pre-law, with eventually moving into law and then taking on a program that was very select, in which a small number of students who had shown particular initiative would become intern criminologists at Scotland Yard. The idea that Chris liked here was learning about crime and law by moving through institutions and then studying under some of the best minds of the world, maybe then pivoting back from Scotland Yard to getting a job in law enforcement or research. The idea being taking crimes, cases where people are unjustly treated, and bringing criminals to light and justice. Obviously, that's a complicated set of feelings, and it's expressed itself in the fact that his crime novels are extremely diligent in their backstories and accuracy. He ensures that when he does his research about places, he visits them. He doesn't just look at pictures. If there's a mountain or a place mentioned in his books, he took a trip there. He walked up that mountain. He understood what it was like to be there before he started writing anything. And in the same way, he has traveled around to law libraries and criminal libraries to research the background of whatever procedures and concepts he's putting together. It matters to him that the book, even if it's a work of fiction, takes you somewhere honestly. I admire that a lot. I don't write novels. Obviously, I weave oral histories and short stories with things like this podcast. But I, too, really feel that if you don't make at least a full-hearted effort in trying to have accuracy in your stories, then it's not going to resonate with people. I mean, naturally, you make mistakes. You say that something has two of a part and it only has one, or it actually has three. Maybe you claim that a group does some sort of activity and that's not the group in charge. You got to admit your mistakes and move on, but it would be really nice if you had taken every pain beforehand to make it as accurate as possible. Built into our journey is the weight of decades. Chris and I have moved through all different kinds of lives. His as a reporter, as a speechwriter, as a book author, and me as an admin, a game maker, a historian, an archivist, a documentary filmmaker, and whatever else they pin on me. It's in every way us reaching over to each other, knowing that however we change, however we are different in each passing year, the thing that stays the same is the link that we share. I have a picture of Chris when we are both about 15 years old, and there's just such a wonderful feeling about the fact that I can have a picture when we are both 50. I look forward to us having pictures together when we're 60 and 70 and 80. I'm not sure what we're going to talk about when we're 80. Probably our medical issues. But that link of love will still be there. Chris would be extremely disappointed in me if I didn't drop a few facts. First of all, his website is orcut.net. He has a blog. He occasionally writes these epic pieces about his craft and what things matter to him, and then he disappears for months and months while he actually gets writing done, which is his top priority. He also has a number of books out that are primarily timeless. They're beautiful fiction works, along with a few autobiographical sketches that are compiled. I love all of them. I've read all of them. It's fascinating to see what my friend has put out over the last 20 years. Chris would also be very disappointed in me if, in mentioning that he was a reporter and copywriter and speechwriter and everything else he's been, that he was also a teacher, both in the college and high school levels, and he loved it. He loved his students. He was one of those teachers that just emotionally cares about what he's doing and the lives that he's guiding and being a part of them. He loved being Mr. Orcutt. Circumstances just put him out of school systems and had him get other jobs, but I think a part of him, just like a part of me with games history, always being there. And that being one of the careers he could have chosen. And teacher Chris would also make it very clear to me that you don't want the class to drag on too long. So I'll leave you with this. It pays extraordinary dividends to have a friendship, to foster and care for a friendship that lasts for years and years and represents not the opportunistic points of distance and easy travel, but going and making a little bit of an effort to put in the work to keep somebody in your life for all of your life. Maybe right now you have six or seven people who were once part of your life. They were in your high school, your college, an old job, and after things ended, you drifted away. Totally understandable. That's how life works. Without the convenience of seeing each other, it's just not as easy to connect and do stuff together. But there's something to be said, regardless of the amount of time that has passed, even if it's been years or decades, to reach out to them. Not every one of those trees bears fruit. Not every time you reach out will you like what the other person has become, and you're under no obligation to continue. But I hope that you would consider thinking of where you last left them as not a final ending, but a chapter that closed, and they who have also changed could start to continue your own story and your own travel down the road, regardless of where it turns, and regardless of where you have to stop, look at each other and say, where was the main topic in all this? Good luck on your hunt. I hope it'll be rewarding. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to Joshua Stein, Scott McGrady, Scott Roseanne, Mark Pilgrim, James Bakoyanu, Forrest Fuqua, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. Now, I'm not saying you can overcome all of your differences, but I'll tell you this. As the years went on, Chris became a Mac guy. He became a reporter and later a writer who loved using his Macintosh. He writes the first draft of all of his papers on a manual typewriter that he keeps maintained with all the care of a watchmaker, but then he moves it to a Macintosh when he's ready to do the revisions. I didn't go in that direction. I'm a Unix and a Windows guy. But I'll tell you, we made it work, okay? We looked past things. We made it work. Our friendship has not been dented by the fact that I think his system is annoyingly expensive and weird and very hard to work in, and I can never figure out where to click. And he has never, ever thought less of me just because I like an overcomplicated set of command lines and working within a system that decides what every extension means and having absolutely no data forks to make stuff just work. If we can make it work, you can make it work. Please, find the inner strength. Build the bridge. Stop the hate.